Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Amanda Zien. Amanda is a pediatrician in the Army who is pending medical retirement after a traumatic brain injury that she had in 2018. After her injury, she had some other secondary conditions that caused her to have a loss of identity, some depression, amongst a number of other issues. She's here today to discuss her experience with her TBI, the treatment that she went through, and how she created a new version of herself. She's also the author of the book Hot Mess to Wellness, which we're also going to discuss a little bit later on in this episode. So welcome to the show, Amanda. I'm glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on with you and be able to talk to someone else military. So,
yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things I love about doing this podcast is getting to talk to all the different service members and veterans, because, you know, we might start talking at the beginning of the episode. We may never have spoken before we started recording, like is the case with right. You and I. But by the end of the episode, we tend to just be chatting like we've known each other for years.
Right.
And it's just that strange connection that the military creates, that weird bond that we all Absolutely. Have. And it's great. I really enjoy it. I've been doing this for a few years now, and you know, I don't see myself slowing down anytime soon, just because I enjoy the camaraderie and the chatting with people like that. So anyways, let's start off with maybe a little bit about yourself and your background. Tell us who you are, you know, for anyone who may not be familiar.
So I am a physician. I did ROTC and commissioned as a butter bar for a lieutenant in 2002. Had a leave for education, went to medical school, and commissioned again into the medical corps as a captain. And did my residency in Hawaii at Tripler, and have been at Fort Campbell ever since. I've been super lucky. I have been through marriage and divorce like many in the military. I remarried, and my current husband is also a pediatrician in the military. We're both pediatricians and flight surgeons. Lieutenant colonels. I was the chief of pediatrics at the local hospital here at the community hospital on post. And then I had my head injury. And thanks to my boss, I stopped caring about the clinic and taking care of everyone else. And he forced me to step down and go to what was then called the WTU. It's now called the SRU, the Soldier Recovery Unit. And I've been there now almost 3 years, trying to get to the point of the Army deciding fit for duty versus medical retirement. So it's been an interesting road.
Yeah, it sounds like it. If you don't mind, could we maybe start with the injury that you experienced that caused the TBI? And could you share what happened and what took place? Was this military related?
No.
Was this okay?
Fun story.
It was not
combat related. Going back, I was looking earlier, today's the 16th, 25 years ago today, I had a bad car accident and had my first TBI. That I think set me up for where I am now with my TBI that occurred in 2018. I had to get multiple letters even to get my first scholarship. And then I had 5 waivers to be on flight status. I had to go through a lot to get into the Army and then to be on flight status, to be a flight surgeon, which at this point I am still considered a flight surgeon, but I wouldn't ever be able to be on flight status again after this TBI. And then this current injury happened the day after Christmas in 2018. We were ice skating. Oh. And I have never worn hockey skates, but I have taken figure skating lessons, and I'm actually not a bad skater on figure skates. I didn't realize hockey skates were a lot different, and I fell and hit my head pretty hard twice. Of course, my husband wanted to take me to the ER, and of course, I refused. He deployed 5 days later, and I continued to refuse to go to the doctor. I continued trying to go to work. I finally did go to the doctor, and they told me I needed brain rest. And I told them they could have 48 hours because, well, I was the chief of pediatrics at the time and I didn't have the staff to cover my shifts. Someone needed to work. So I went back to work the following Monday and I couldn't get through the day. The room was spinning. Luckily I have amazing, amazing colleagues and they finished seeing my patients. I texted my boss and told him that my work was done for the day. My documentation was done. My patients were being seen. And he called me and basically I got in trouble for coming to work. And he told me he didn't want to see me back until I was cleared. I have not worked a full day in clinic since then. My boss was pretty amazing. He took good care of me. The command of the hospital in general took very good care of me. They made sure I took care of myself when I tried to be the hard-headed type A personality that wanted to continue working. Because that's how we are, both as a physician and, I mean, soldiers are just as bad. They don't go to the doctor when they should. So, he forced me to take care of myself. I realized that my symptoms were a little worse than I had thought. I basically had migraines daily. I think it ended up, I finally had some acupuncture, and that was the first time I was migraine free in 8 months. Oh, wow. When I finally, yeah, I think I counted 2, I had to keep a headache diary for the neurologist, and I had 2 headache-free days in the first 8 months after this head injury. So it was mainly migraines. Migraines are the worst, but I did have some balance issues and dizziness, and I now have ringing in my ears, and I had concentration issues. They basically told me I had ADHD, but with all of the testing I had to have prior with flight status and everything else because of my previous head injury, I had the neuropsych testing. We know I don't have ADHD. Now I'm testing as if I have ADHD. So it's basically been brought about by the TBI. So the medications don't work. And it drives my husband crazy.
I can only imagine, right?
Yeah, it drives him crazy. And on a migraine days, I'm pretty much worthless. I just wander aimlessly. I can usually get rid of the pain. And I have different ways of I have the medications. I have the devices. I have multiple ways, acupuncture. My acupuncturist, who is amazing, actually taught me the headache point. And so I have needles that I can, and the pain is not the issue. It's the aura and postictal, which I did not even realize migraines had. As a physician, I did not realize migraines had what's called a postictal phase, which seizures have. That's when the patient's just completely out of it after the fact. And I didn't realize that migraines had that until I experienced it. And I'm down. I'm completely worthless for the day and sometimes the next day. And I don't think my husband realized how bad my symptoms were because he was gone for the first 9 months. He missed the most of it. Luckily his family is local and they took amazing care of me. Between my husband's family and my medical care team, I went to the TBI clinic as well. I had some great care, and so I am much better. I still have a lot of symptoms. Migraines are the main issue, and concentration. Right. I'm so much better than I was.
Well, that's good. And I think it sounds like anyways that you were fortunate that your job had you working with other physicians who probably could recognize some of the symptoms that you were experiencing and really push you to taking the time off and getting the help and the treatment that you needed, as opposed to someone who was working in any other job,
right?
Anywhere, never mind in the military, just anywhere, where, you know, if you're not working with people who would recognize those things, they may just think, oh, well, you know, you're just slacking off if you're not concentrating on your job or whatever. And, you know, these people obviously knew that wasn't your personality. Right. That wasn't who you were. And so obviously there's something going on and that they needed to help you address that. Right. So the treatments, so acupuncture is one of those things that you were saying is helpful. It's funny. I had someone on the other day, a few weeks ago, actually, and we were talking about different treatment options that are available for various things. And me and needles are just not compatible. Like, it just doesn't work out for me. And, you know, so someone had mentioned acupuncture and I was like, that just made my skin crawl. But there's other, you know, forms of treatment too, that can be helpful for those types of things too. But acupuncture is something that, you know, some people may not even have thought of prior to, you know, hearing it from someone like you who has used it with some benefit for the symptoms that you're feeling, right?
Acupuncture can treat so many different things as well. And chiropractic really helps. Problem is we have very limited ability to have chiropractic in the military. I can't get that regularly, but that definitely initially I was getting some chiropractic care as well. And that helped a lot. They also have the Botox injections that didn't help. I'm on a monthly injection. I have to give myself, to keep the migraines to a minimum. And then I have, you know, the medications for when I have them. And then I also have what's called acephaly. And I know that I've actually seen commercials about those. It's like a little, my husband calls it my cyborg. It's a little device that goes right here and it works on the trigeminal nerve. And it's almost like a TENS unit, where it gives the electrical impulses and helps to use electricity to make the migraine go away. And then I also have what's called an alpha stim, which now is very difficult to get, but I got mine before some of the changeover. And that actually helps a lot with anxiety and, but also can help with pain. And so I have that. So I have all my different modalities for when I'm in pain. Problem is none of those help with this aura that I have where I basically am complete. It's like the Claritin Clear commercial. You know, I'm in a fog. And so I can't drive, or I won't allow myself to drive. So when I have those days, but those are few and far between, I only have about 3 to 5 a month. And so I'm definitely better and hoping to get to the point where I can be working again. But right now I'm just kind of a, I'm in limbo.
Yeah.
Awaiting. Yeah.
And so it sounds like this is something that, you know, you could overcome to some degree, where you could get back to work and not have these symptoms quite as bad. So is this something that you're expecting is like a lifelong kind of injury that you've experienced, or is there ways that you can reverse these effects down the line?
I don't know that anyone really has that answer. I had one neurologist that told me, and I don't see him any longer, that, well, it's been longer than a year, you're never going to get any better. And okay. I've actually improved since then. So, but when he told me that, I was re-referred to a different neurologist. I've had other people who have suffered from a TBI tell me it took them 8 to 10 years, but they're back to 90% of what they were before. I don't know that anyone really knows, and every experience is different. I think that's why a lot of the sports teams and everyone military are so focused on concussions and making sure that they keep track of numbers. And if you've had multiple concussions, they're trying to really keep an eye on it, because even the people I worked with were thinking, this is so odd. We have, I'm being a pediatrician, we have kids come in all the time with a concussion. And you look back at that and you think, why did they get better and you're not getting better? And you have to look at each individual situation is different. And multiple service members have had TBI after TBI and had issues while deployed, and the concussion of explosions and whatnot. And were they adequately treated? It's hard to say, because some of them were before we were really keeping a close eye on it. And with my first TBI, it wasn't even really a focus. When I was in high school and got in that car accident, I had so many other, I mean, I had two chest tubes. I had both lungs collapsed, bilateral hemopneumothorax. So I was life flighted to the hospital. So those injuries took precedence. And so no one really thought about the TBI, and no one really, it wasn't at the forefront because of all the other injuries. And so of course I had brain rest because I couldn't do anything. So, so I never really thought about it. And then when I was in the recovery for this one, a lot of the neurologists and other specialists that I spoke with said, well, that probably is part of the reason it set you up for having the worsening of the symptoms. And then also the fact that I was a physician and working at this high, high level, and now I can't. And I think that was one of the biggest things I had a problem with, was I can't do what I used to do. I used to be able to run a clinic, see patients, work inpatient and outpatient, make the schedule. You know, I was always tired. Of course, I didn't realize I had sleep apnea until they tested me for that after I had my head injury. I just thought I was a tired doctor. I had a really hard time accepting the fact that I am not who I was. And that first, you know, 6-8 weeks, and I wasn't able to drive. So luckily my husband's family was there for me, and they took me to my appointments and took care of me. His sister was amazing. She was always there for me. But once I actually got past that and was able to start going back, and I tried to go back to work and realized that I couldn't see patients as quickly. And then I started having issues again with that loss of identity. Like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with my life? And it was April of last year was when I finally was like, all right, enough is enough. Like, I've gained all this weight. I feel horrible? Is it because now I'm overweight and eating crap? Because I just was wallowing in self-pity and I was doing all the things I shouldn't be doing, eating all the junk I shouldn't be eating, you know, comfort food and just it. So I decided, you know, enough is enough. And so, of course, I go to the bookstore and I'm like, I'm going to, you know, start a new diet. I'm going to get an exercise routine. And there's nothing out there for the average person. It's, you know, HIIT or P90X or crazy stuff that the average person who is just wanting to get up and move more isn't going to be able to just jump off the couch and do those things. Right. And then you got all the crazy diets. And as a physician, I know you should never completely cut anything out of your diet. And I know that some people do very well with the keto and whatnot and the gluten-free and whatnot. But if you do not have a true gluten intolerance, and I talk about this in my book, if you do not have a true gluten intolerance or celiac disease, there's no reason to cut gluten out of your diet. There's no reason to ever cut anything completely out because then you just end up binging. And that's the problem with most diets. I mean, you get the diet and you end up following this strict diet and okay, I'm going to do this diet for 90 days and you lose all this weight. Awesome. Then you go right back to the way you were before and you gain it all plus some. And that's why we have this yo-yo diet society in America. Well, it doesn't help that everything we eat is supersized. And you go to a restaurant and you're getting three times the amount of bread and meat that you should be eating and half the vegetables, no fruit. And I'm guilty. Trust me, I'm guilty. But I wanted to have a plan and there was nothing out there. And so I started writing up a plan. And then 4 pages later, I was like, I should write a book. So I Googled, how do you write a book? And I came across, right? Everybody right. Googles nowadays. I came across self-publishing school. And a little plug for them. It's not cheap, but they walked me through every step of writing a book and helped me publish my book. And I continue to meet with a coach and I hope to maybe do some children's books, being a pediatrician. But this book really was more for me than for anybody else. I was writing it for me, but at the same time, hoping that it would help that other, you know, 40-year-old woman who is overweight and sitting on the couch and needs to get moving and do the right thing. It was supposed to be my accountability. Now Christmas came and I kind of fell off the wagon and I'm slowly working on getting back up there. My habits kind of changed, but like I say in the book, you can jump back in at any point. And I talk about more than just weight. I talk about more than just, I mean, because being skinny isn't healthy. Being, you know, my first chapter is on mindfulness, just because if you're not mindful, you sit on the couch and eat a whole bag of chips. If you're not mindful, you're constantly on the go and forgetting things. And I already forget everything anyway. If I don't lose my keys at least once a day, it's not a normal day for me. I'm constantly forgetting things. I don't know how much of that is my head injury and how much of that is just me, because I'm constantly forgetting everything. I have to write everything down now. But mindfulness, relaxation, hydration, a lot of people don't realize they may feel hungry when really they're thirsty, We are chronically dehydrated. We don't drink enough of the correct fluids.
Right, of the correct thing. That's the key, I think, right there, because we can, you know, especially when we're talking to people in the military, we can pound back the energy drinks and
oh my gosh,
and after hours we could be pounding back the beers and everything else, but that's not what your body is really looking for. You know, it needs the water and that type of hydration. Yeah.
Oh, I had not really been an energy drink person. And then I deployed, and my first deployment, I started drinking the Rippets.
Yep.
Because they're everywhere.
Yep.
And now though, I found a new energy drink that I like. It's actually made by V8.
Really?
And it has no more caffeine in it than what a cup of coffee or a cup of tea would have. And it has a serving of fruit and vegetables in it. So
there you go.
That's my cheat.
It's probably the healthiest energy drink out there. I don't know. I haven't looked, but it sounds like it anyways.
I actually had to look into the energy drinks, having been a flight surgeon. And I looked up all of the different drinks. And actually, all I had to do was walk around one safety brief and take drinks away from soldiers and look at the backs of them, because every different kind of energy drink known to man was at that safety brief. Right. And I actually looked into a lot of the energy drinks, and they're so, a lot of people don't realize that it's not just caffeine that's in there. There are other forms of energy in there that is just as bad as, if not worse than, the caffeine. And at levels that are crazy high, because it's more than one serving usually. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that in the book as well, that a lot of us will look at something and be like, oh, it's only 120 calories. Well, it's also 2.5 servings. So, right. And I go through a steak dinner in the chapter where, so when I go through the book, I start out and I tell people, take a week for each chapter. Try to create a new habit. Try to change your habits rather than just go on a diet. And so I start with the mindfulness, and then I talk about relaxation, because as a doctor, I didn't know how to relax. I actually had them ask me what my hobbies were. I said, what hobbies? I don't have time for hobbies. And one of the things that they told me I needed to do was come up with a hobby to work the other side of my brain. And so I needed to come up with something like a craft. And so my niece took me to the bookstore, Books a Million, and we looked into all the different, I tried origami. Yeah. Perfectionist, can't do origami. There were a lot of folds in that paper. It looked horrible. But I ended up crocheting, and as of January 1st, I have my own business called Amanda's Crochet Cubby. I just do little craft fairs. I have a couple vendor booths here in town. I have a little Facebook page, and it's something that gives me purpose right now since I'm not working. And crocheting actually helps with my headaches, and it actually helps with my anxiety, which went through the roof after my head injury. So the relaxation is the second chapter. And then I talk about, what do I talk about? Let's see. Oh, sleep. Sleep is the third chapter, because, well, none of us get the amount of sleep we should get. And it talks about sleep hygiene. And a lot of people want to say, oh, I can't sleep, but they have a horrible routine at night. And that really is the number one problem, is not having a good routine and a set schedule. Because when you're going to bed at all different times, as if I, as a physician, was ever one to talk, because I was working nights, working days, working nights, working days. But now I can actually try to have a little bit better schedule. And then I talk about hydration, water, water, water. I myself do a lot of decaffeinated, unsweet iced tea, because I get sick of water. So I like my husband calls it my colored water because I drink it so light that he calls it my colored water. But we switched to decaf tea at home because we drink a lot of tea. And so it just was a better option for us. And then I get into the diet and not being on a diet, but I talk about portions and I go through the steak dinner and the fact that a portion of meat is supposed to be the size of your palm. Now, usually steaks are more than, technically, I think that's like 3 to 4 ounces. And we're getting, what, 12-ounce steak?
All 16, so, yeah.
Right? And then you've got the potato and the bread. And it's like you're supposed to have, you know, one serving of starch. And like half of one of those baked potatoes is probably a serving. And
then add on the butter and sour cream and everything
right,
else on it.
Right. Well, and fats are good. And that's what a lot of America doesn't realize because we went through that low fat phase. Mm-hmm. But fats are actually good. Fat is not the problem, believe it or not. Starches and carbs are the bad carbs, not the vegetables, not the fruits, unless of course you're diabetic, and then that's a whole nother story. But really the problem is the junk that we as Americans love eating, the chips and all of the processed foods, yep. the fast foods, the things that are easy, and it's hard to eat healthy. It takes some work. It's hard to eat the right foods. Trust
it is.
Me.
Yeah. I mean, just walking into the grocery store, there's right? just so many processed foods, things that, you read the ingredient list and you can't pronounce half the things on there right? because there's so many different chemicals. And, you're talking about like some of the migraines and things like that you're having. And my wife was suffering from some headaches like that, migraines and stuff after some seizures that she had a few years ago.
Oh, gosh.
And she found that one of the things that was triggering some of these migraines was some of these like artificial sweeteners, like mm-hmm. the aspartame and things mm-hmm. like that, where she would have a like a diet soda or something, and that would just trigger like almost like within 10 or 15 minutes, like her migraines were just kicking in. And it, she was like, why is it happening now? And then she put two and two together and figured out there's a correlation. Every time that I start having these migraines, I just had that type of drink or something with those kind of artificial sweeteners. So
a lot, some people it wine can do it. Some people processed meats, and that's why a lot of times we'll have people do a diary. Because it's crazy the things that can trigger. And honestly, when I eat healthy, when I eat good food, I notice a difference in how I feel. Mm-hmm. And I love eating comfort food. But once I start doing that, I end up noticing there's a difference. So I don't think it necessarily triggers my migraines. I don't know. Maybe I'll have to keep a closer eye on that. Right. Really weather is horrible for my migraines. The barometric pressure changes. We have a big storm come through. It's not a good day for me. And then trying to do too much when I don't get enough sleep and, I try to fit too much in, like, into a weekend or try to do too much. I usually pay for it. The next day I'll have a migraine. So it's different for everyone, but
it is. And that's one of the things with our brains are so complex,
crazy.
And so different. One injury that one person has could affect them differently than the way it affects somebody else.
Absolutely.
So, it's just, you fell and hit your head, and that triggered, you know, this type of response in you, where someone else could fall, you know, in very much the same fashion and not have, you know, they may have a headache for, you know, a day or two, but then maybe nothing after that.
And it all
depends on your unique set of circumstances, how your brain is made up, how what part of your head you fell on, even probably
that's another reason why coaches and even in high schools and even down to grade school level, they are really keeping an eye on these kids who hit their heads. Yep. I know that, and granted, I haven't been in the pediatric clinic in, gosh, it's been 3 years almost. It's been 3 years. I know that when I was in there and practicing regularly, we had to let these kids back into sports. They would not let them play until they were evaluated by us and it was okay for them to go back. And even so, if they had a concussion, they weren't allowed to play for a week. Or there are actually rules and regulations in the different sports, the different, I guess, leagues. Whatever the high school and elementary and grade school associations, they actually have rules that forbid the kids from playing if they've had a concussion, because they've seen that if you have another concussion too soon, it can actually cause more damage than later on. So,
and that's probably similar to what you experienced with the one injury that you had years ago, and then this other one.
And it's hard to say.
It could be, it could not be, you know, exactly. But it's like, why take the chance, you know, to play another football game, to, you know, do, you know, whatever, like, is it really worth it for a lifelong, injury like that, where you could easily avoid that by riding the bench for another weekend or something like that.
Right. You know? Well, and they don't understand that though. And that's what's really hard to get a young kid to understand. Sorry, dude, you're not playing this weekend. And they don't understand because they're so in the moment at that age. But even with me, there are a lot of things that I used to enjoy doing that I don't do anymore. I want to go horseback riding so, so, so badly. And my niece even looked into buying me a helmet, one of the like really, really, really good helmets. And I've been told I'm not allowed to horseback ride anymore. there's too much at risk. If I were to have another bad head injury, we don't know what would happen. And nothing may happen, but I am getting back into things. Last summer I did get the kayak back out. And so we have been going kayaking again. I really enjoy the outdoors, and I'm slowly getting back into all of those things. And kind of testing things out. But what I'd really like to do is get back to work. And so coming up here within the next month, I'll kind of find out for sure what's going to happen with the Army. And if I'm found fit for duty, I'll go back to work and under a profile. And hopefully I can slowly work my way back up. That's what I was trying to do before, but I wasn't doing well at it.
And it was probably too soon at that point. You probably just weren't ready to start, maybe?
I think I try to do too much.
Okay.
I think
that makes sense. Yeah.
I think I try to jump in and do too much. But if I'm medically retired, I'm hoping to find a position where I'm not expected to. The problem with medicine is now it's all about seeing a certain number of patients in a day. Mm-hmm. And I need to find a place where I can go at my own pace. And so it may be, COVID opened up a lot of doors. Virtual medicine is definitely something now that can be done. And so I might be able to do that. But in the meantime, I crochet and I have my crochet cubby. My husband likes to tease me about that. But I have been enjoying that because it's something I enjoy doing and it gives me purpose.
I was going to ask about that because I know with other like mental health aspects, a lot of times things like a craft or a hobby or something mm-hmm. is suggested to people, painting or a craft like crocheting mm-hmm. or baking or whatever, gardening. Doing something like that because it helps you stay focused on the present moment, like now, here and right. now, and focus in on that. And so I was actually going to ask about that, where, do you feel that the crocheting, in addition to just being something that you enjoy doing, do you feel like it's helping you stay focused more on, what's going on now in the moment? Or is it something that it's just one of those nice to have kind of things that you just enjoy doing?
I think it definitely, it helps me to, I think, more have a purpose. I think part of my problem in the beginning was there was no reason to get up and get dressed and do anything because I had a headache and I couldn't go anywhere and I couldn't do anything. And then I started trying to go back to work and now I'm not allowed to work until we kind of figure everything out. And so I needed to do something. I can't not have a purpose in life. I have to be doing something. And so the crochet, at first, it started as just a way for me to not have headaches and a way for me to decrease my anxiety and just kind of, because they told me I needed to find something to do. And I started doing it and realized, wow, this actually helps my headaches. If I have a headache coming on and I sit and do crochet, it actually helps it. Well, then I kind of started having things pile up and I thought I need to just start selling this stuff. So
right.
I put it in one of the little vendor places and I don't really make money off of it. By the time I buy all the stuff and then actually sell something, I break even. But it gives me something to do. And now I have my little business. And so, it's a purpose for life until I figure out what the heck is going on in my life. And I think we all kind of need that. And so that's mine. But as far as the head injury goes, I hope I continue to get better and I get to the point where I can get back. I still have, my medical license. I'm still credentialed. I can still see patients. I still have it all up here. I'm just much slower than I used to be. And I can't multitask like I used to. I used to be able to just put out fires left and right and talk to this nurse and do this and do that and do the other. And now it's like, wait, you can't talk to me until I finish this thought. And I finish what I'm thinking. Okay, now you may talk to me. I can only do one thing at a time. And in today's world of medicine, you can't be that way. You have to be able to go, 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 go. It's expected that you see a certain number of patients. In the civilian world, they don't make money if you don't see patients. So they're not going to pay you if you're not seeing patients. So that's kind of where I'm hoping to be able to work my way up to. I just have to find a place that will allow me to do that.
Right. Right. And I think you made a good point because there's just a shift in your expectations for what you're capable of doing in the present moment, right? You, things may change down the line, but right. for right now, you know, this is your limitation. You're at this point where you can do, and I don't mean limitation as in like you can't, you know, you're not, you know, mentally capable of doing things. Like you said, you still have that information up there, the medical information that you've had for, you know, all these years. But it just means that you're not multitasking the way you used to. Mm-hmm. You're not, you know, talking to three or four different nurses at the same time, trying to solve all the world's problems. Right.
Right.
And the reason why I bring that up is I think other people who maybe have experienced some sort of brain injury, like what you have, or even a combat related one, you know, it's probably pretty frustrating to be in a position, and I don't know because I haven't been there myself, but I have to imagine it's pretty frustrating when you look back at just a few years ago at all the things you were able to do, and then now all of a sudden you can't do hardly any of it. And it just, I think it your mindset needs to shift to say, you know what, okay, I'm not the same person that I was. Right. Back then, there's something that happened that changed a part of who I am, and I need to adjust my expectations for what I'm able to do. And you know, if we're sitting there beating ourselves up because we can't do the things that we did 5-10 years ago, right. I mean, hell, I can't run as fast as I did when I was 18. So, like, you know, right. like that's right. just. That's just a part of life. Things change. You know, things happen to you, things change. And you just have to, I think, learn to accept that and adjust to it.
You have to stop having the pity party. I've had plenty of pity parties. You have to stop, though, and you have to realize that your injury doesn't define you. You define you, and you have to find the new you. And it's taken me a long time. And I still have my days where I get upset that I can't do what I used to be able to do. But I can do so many things still. And like I said, I'm still credentialed cognitively. I still have all the information in there. I'm just a little slower at getting it out. Sometimes I have a hard time finding words, and especially if I'm super stressed out. So I have to do things a little bit differently than I used to. And it took me a long time to realize that that's okay, that I am this new me and I'm no worse. I'm just different. And it's hard. And I can't imagine being in the position of a soldier who, you know, an amputee or someone who had a major injury. I can't imagine being in that position, but I would imagine that they have a similar situation where they have to think about, this is the new me. Yeah. And it's hard to think, I can't do what I used to do, but at some point you just have to get over it. And not to say that I don't still occasionally have my days, but I have a great support system, and that's super important, is to make sure that you have a good support system, because you have to have those people who will kick your butt into gear. You can have those people that will let you cry on their shoulder, and that's okay. But sometimes you need that person who's going to give you tough love. And I definitely have that person. He happens to live with me, and he really, really pushes me to do what he knows I can do, even when I don't think I can. So that's definitely, you got to have that support system.
Yeah. I mean, the support system is great, but it's also, I think kind of what you were saying is focus on what you can do and not mm-hmm. necessarily on what you can't do, because you're still blessed with a lot of abilities. You still have things that you can do.
Right.
And you even can learn new skills along the way.
Yeah, crochet. You know,
crochet, right? It, like before all this, you didn't have that. And you know, and it's funny, you know, to some extent, but it's true. And it shows that even though you did have damage to your brain, the thing that learns stuff in your, you know, right, in your body, right, you still were able to learn something new. So it's not like it's a complete, you know, disaster in your brain. Like you still have that ability to go learn new things. So, it's not, you know, the end of the world for you and your injury. There is still hope for you. And, you know, honestly, there's still hope for other people who are out there who are in a similar situation.
It could always be worse.
And I always try to tell people that you've already survived 100% of your bad days that you've gone through in your life.
Right.
And you know what? Tomorrow's going to be better than any one of those days. So, you know, wake up tomorrow and, you know, put a smile on your face if you can, and just go out there and try to do something to challenge yourself and get better,
you know, at
whatever it is that you're doing. So,
absolutely.
Amanda, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today, talking about, you know, your experience and your book. One thing I don't think we covered is, where people can go to, get a copy of your book, where you have it. Okay. There it is. Mess to Wellness. All right. So anyone who
to Wellness. So it's available on Amazon. Okay. It is, I believe the e-version is $1.99 and the softback is $10.95, I think.
Okay. We won't hold you to that.
Memory is one of my issues.
I did the same thing with my book. The prices, I change them every once in a while.
Right. Well, and Amazon changes them on you too. So.
And they do. Yeah. So you may go on there and find it at a lower price, and that's great. So, you know, go check that out.
Right.
And so I'll have a link to the book in the show notes. So anyone who's looking to get a copy of the book can go and grab that. But, you know, lots of great information about, you know, just overall wellness. And I love the title, From Hot Mess or Hot Mess to Wellness.
That's because, well, I am still a little bit of a hot mess, but I was a complete hot mess, and it's a lifelong journey. So, sure. You can always go back and reread and reattempt to pick up those good habits, because it's a lifelong journey. It's hard to do the right thing.
Yeah. And especially, you know, you were talking before about, you know, being a physician and knowing all the right things. Like, you would, if you had a patient sitting here and saying, this is the problem I'm going through, you would tell them the right things to
we're
do.
The worst.
And, you know, even still, even in that situation, you still found yourself, you know, doing some of the wrong things. And I guess I'm saying that with the thought that it's okay. It's okay to give yourself a little grace and so, know that could happen too, you know?
So I had someone tell me once that, and I wrote it down because I knew I would get it wrong, because I'm that person who always messes up the punchline of the joke. A lapse in pattern doesn't have to be a relapse. Okay. So just because you have a lapse in your pattern, whether it be you stop working out, you stop doing something, going to the gym or whatever it was, or you had that binge day where you just decided enough, whatever, I'm done with this. That lapse in judgment does not have to be a complete relapse. And so I thought that was a great bit of advice, that you can turn it around. Like you said, tomorrow's a new day. And you can start fresh, and whatever happened yesterday is yesterday. So
you can't change the past. So focus on the future. And I think that's true with all the things that we were talking about today. You can't change any of that. So focus on what you can change and what you can do and accomplish, and look at the bright side of things and focus on that, right?
Yes.
So, all right, Amanda, thank you again for joining us and sharing your story. I really do appreciate you coming on and, looking forward to, seeing your progress and hopefully, praying for the best that you will, have a positive outcome, with all of this. So, looking forward to hearing more about that and thanks again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.